Welcome to Homecoming Sunday at MCC Portland. This is, woohoo! Quiet woohoos, lighting it up. Hi, Shelby.
Hi.
Good. Awesome. This Sunday, which is the Sunday after Labor Day, we are at the cusp of summer and fall, aren't we? Summer vacations are winding down, and people are returning to usual routines, teachers and children returning to school. And this is a Sunday, as our homecoming tradition is, that we extend special encouragement for friends and family to join us, and perhaps some who have never joined us, or those that have been away for a spell, to return and share their Sundays here with us at MCC Portland in a sincere hope that they may find a spiritual home with us as community in this place. So in honor of Homecoming Sunday, I want to take a moment and I invite you to turn to someone near you and share briefly, two things. I want you to briefly share something memorable or enjoyable that you did this summer. And if you are the listener, after someone has shared, just simply say, well, welcome home. So turn to someone near you and take a moment, share something memorable or enjoyable you did this summer, and then welcome one another home. Just take a moment. Now, if the other person hasn't shared, make sure you share that time. Well, welcome home. Welcome home. This homecoming comes at a particularly unique time in the life of our community, I believe. It's a season where, as a community, we are in the process of discerning and deciding about this very building in which we sit, this house of worship, which many identify as a spiritual home. So if you are not aware or not yet aware, In August, our board of directors is recommending to the congregation that after being in this space since 1977, that we consider the sale of it to look for a new space that will serve our ministry into the future. Now, we have written the recommendation and frequently asked questions, particularly if this is news to you, about how this process is going forward. We have a forum next Sunday after church and then a congregational meeting on the 27th. But it's an important moment to reflect, I believe, about house and home on this Homecoming Sunday. And over the next few weeks, as we approach this important moment in the life of our community, I want to reflect on house and home together. How are they related? But more importantly, how are they different? Not just in our personal lives, not just in a communal life, but particularly in the life of a community of faith. What does house and home mean? Our first reading may have struck us a little bit oddly, but it chronicles a particularly pivotal moment in the history of ancient Israel. It was a moment of great consequence in ancient Jewish spiritual history. It was the building of the temple in Jerusalem under the reign of King Solomon, about 3 millennia ago, just to paint with a very broad brush. This was the place, this temple in Jerusalem on Mount Zion. This was the place where the presence of God, the God of Israel, was said to dwell among human beings. This place where heaven and earth intersected in Jewish spirituality. But in order to understand the meaning of that moment, of which we heard just a brief excerpt, it's important to briefly recall what happened before the temple was built in Jerusalem, the more than 400 years that had happened before the kingdom and the building of this temple. So after the Israelites had entered the promised land, for nearly 300 years, the children of Israel were a confederation of desert tribes. They were not a kingdom. They had no king or ruler in that sense. They were governed by a tribal chieftain, who in the Bible is referred to as a judge, a succession of judges, men and most memorably, the judge Deborah. Deborah. Bam, Deborah. Yeah. But even before that time where they were in the promised land, there was the generation of the Exodus, the primary founding story of our biblical tradition. Those Jews who were released from slavery in Egypt, who under the leadership of Moses, Aaron, and Miriam, I'm getting ahead of myself here, spent 40 years wandering in the desert wilderness. And in those years, they were learning what it meant to be in relationship with this mysterious God who was both a liberator, but also was very demanding about how they were going to live in relationship. And a God who earnestly, earnestly sought to be in relationship with them. So that's during more than 400 years. Where was their spiritual home? Where is it that God lived? Now, in the ancient world, most deities were local deities, with the exception of gods and goddesses who were associated with natural forces, which were not necessarily localized. Most were linked to a specific geographic place. They were the god or goddess of a mountain, of a town, a village, perhaps of a whole nation. But when you went to another place, most commonly you were not expected to bring your own deity with you. You were expected to pay reverence and homage to the local deity. One of the most extraordinary but lesser noticed features about the Exodus story is that the Jews credited the God of their ancestors, the one who actually lived in a different location than Egypt, freed them from Egypt. This God from somewhere else delivered them out of Egypt, and the same God went with them wherever they went. That was quite unusual and quite unique in the ancient world. This presence was a pillar of cloud by day, a pillar of fire by night. And then it became linked to a beautiful and ornate golden box called the Ark of the Covenant. If you can remember Raiders of the Lost Ark. And the Ark of the Covenant was kept in a tent as they moved about, because a tent was a logical way of moving about in the desert. God didn't dwell in a specific place that they had to travel to in order to visit with God. God went with them wherever they were, and actually kind of provided a sort of a navigator function, an arrow pointing them in a particular direction. They followed the pillar and the pillar of cloud and fire. So we have this founding story of wandering in the wilderness and God more or less wandering with, and the story of a central place of worship. So there is this combined history that has a certain ambivalence about a house for God, God's dwelling place. Our biblical tradition is a little ambivalent about it. On one hand, we know, and we should know, I imagine, from our own personal experience, that there are sites, there are places that are spiritually important in our spiritual lives, because we're not just disembodied spiritual beings, we are physical as well. We need physical reminders that prompt us to remember spiritual reality. So upon its building in Jerusalem in Mount Zion, this temple housed the Ark, and it was named as God's house. It was real. It was beautiful throughout the ancient world, admired for its beauty. It was an inspiration, not just because it was an icon or a metaphor, but it was where heaven and earth intersected for them. This invisible God of the whole universe took up residence with them in that space. Now, we might want to dismiss that as a quaint and antiquated idea. But pause for a moment. Where are physical places where you have felt the Spirit is just present in that place? That somehow the Spirit feels more alive or heavier, however you experience that. It may be in a building. It may be in a grove of trees in nature. It may be an altar space in your own home that has specially selected and treasured objects that inspire your prayer and devotion. The ancient Celts called those thin places where the veil between the physical and the spiritual are more permeable. So to say that the presence, the holy presence, dwells in a place is not to claim that it's the only place where God is found, but sometimes it is a place that you can find on a map and actually visit. On the other hand, that's not the only picture of spiritual home that we have. It's not surprising that after all that wandering about in the desert, even a spectacular temple would not turn out to be a permanent residence. And you know, even according to Scripture, the building of the temple wasn't God's idea. Just like the choosing of a king wasn't God's idea first. It was kind of like this. This is how it sounds in the original Hebrew. No, not really. Picture it, 3,000 years ago, ancient Palestine. King David, the second king, the great king who is remembered in history, in Jewish history. King David, after having more or less a lifetime of struggle, of betrayal, of warring, is finally experiencing some peace after having established a throne and a kingdom in Jerusalem, has just finished a beautiful cedar home of his own. And he looks around and is like, things are going awesome, God. Oh, and you're still in a tent. So, yeah, that's exactly how it sounds. Let me build you a house. Let me build you a house. King David's idea. And King David's spiritual advisor, the prophet Nathan, no relation, thank you, mother and father, but the prophet Nathan was King David's spiritual advisor, and Nathan said, good idea. Go for it. And then Nathan had a conversation with God, who was like, he's going to build me a house. I'm the creator of the universe. So just go back and tell him he's not going to be building me a house. His son can. So dosing out a little bit of humility. It was interesting to notice it wasn't God's idea first. It was David's idea, and not a bad idea, but even from the beginning, a certain ambivalence. So what does that mean for us? Where is it that God dwells? Where is God's house? What makes a spiritual home? It's a little cheesy, but as I've been preparing this sermon, there's an old song that has, well, not old for some of us, but old for others of us, an old song that has been running through my mind, first written and recorded in 1964, Burt Bacharach and Dionne Warwick, House is Not a Home. It's been covered by Stevie Wonder, Luther Vandross, Barbara Streisand, Aretha Franklin, you know it. Last year, Dionne Warwick actually re-recorded this as a duet with Neo. Who knew? Who knew? So, if you know it, sing a couple of refrains with me. A house is not a home. A chair is still a chair, even when there's no one sitting there. But a chair is not a house, and a house is not a home, when there's no one there to hold you tight, and no one there you can kiss goodnight. A room is still a room. So it goes on for a couple more verses. A house is not a home. They're not the same thing. A house, a building, is not a home. Home is a relationship. Maybe you have been lucky enough to experience a relationship like that. Hopefully all of us understand what that means. There are things that remind us of those relationships. There may be sounds, there may be sights, there may be smells that remind us of home. You know, is it Airwick that now has these special air fresheners that smell like baked apple pie and, you know, a pear crisp? It's like to evoke these homey memories, that something will remind us of home. And while it may have been a physical place, what it reminds us of is the relationship. Home. Have you ever experienced arms that hold you? Gazing into someone's eyes, hearing someone's voice, and knowing, yeah, this feels like home. It's not a place. It is a relationship. I think it's revealing to remember that during those years of wandering in the desert, the wilderness wanderings with Moses, Aaron, and Miriam, the tent where this Ark of the Covenant was held, the tent later became called a tabernacle. It was originally called the Tent of Meeting. The Tent of Meeting. And it wasn't where the elders necessarily met and deliberated. It was where Moses went and met God. The Tent of Meeting. Meeting isn't about a place. Meeting is about being in the presence of one another. So, you have doubtless heard the expression, home is where the heart is. I love the expression of a comedian whose name I forget, who says, home is where your stuff is. Home is where your stuff is. And the longer we live, the more stuff we accumulate, and it's not just the physical stuff, and you know what I'm talking about. Your stuff does not necessarily define your home, and it's not just about a location either. It is about those relationships that shape and support, that comfort, that challenge, that welcome, that celebrate, or are just being there with one another. And there's another saying about home that I love. Home is where they have to take you in no matter what. Now, not all of us have had homes like that, but some of us know what that's like. It may not be our family of origin, but home is where we know they will take us in no matter what. Because of the kind of relationship, it's less important what you do, probably even more important that it's not about what you have or haven't done, but you simply belong with us because this is home. That reading from Kenneth Patton that we heard captures it, I think, really beautifully. I'll repeat a few of those lines. We arrive out of singular rooms, walk across branching streets. we come to be assured that brothers and sisters surround us, to restore their images to our eyes, enlarge our voice by common speaking and singing, the warmth of hands. It is good to be with one another. This is a place of meeting. Home can happen in a house or any other location. It may or may not be where we keep our stuff, but it is about relationship. So homecoming is renewing or reclaiming or maybe finding for the first time that kind of relationship. A house, even God's house, may have a physical setting, but it will never substitute for a home. Restore the image to our eyes. May our voices speak and sing together. May we clasp warm hands. Home, spiritual home, is about a relationship. So may we not only treasure and build a house for one another and for God, but may we create together a home.